Can't put it up. No one's going to listen. That's for sure.
Alfred,
okay, but the other stuff.
Okay, right? I'll give it to you.
All right, let's learn. Let's not complain. Let's learn. Okay. Okay, we're up to let's continue where we left off. Pasuk Hey. We already went through one round. Let's review the pasuk very quickly. Pasuk Hey, Pasuk Vav. Just two psukim. That's it. Pasuk Hey, Pasuk Vav. Two long psukim on page 368. Hashem Elokim Hatziv Okos, three Shemos of Hashem's name. Adnus, Yudke Vavke, and Tziv Okos, Hanogea Bo'aretz. Hashem will touch the earth, Vatomoig, and it will melt. We learned a few perushim, what this means. It means either it will literally melt, Hashem will shout, it will sweat. Hanogea means Hashem will shout, Vatomoig means it will sweat. And we had a third interpretation, it will shake. We learned the Rashi, three perushim. It will sweat, shake, or melt. The Avlu Kol Yosheva, all those that live in the land will mourn. The Ulsa Kayar Kula, there's a word that's missing. The Mayim will rise up. What Mayim are we referring to? The Mediterranean? It's not so clear. The water will rise up and will flood, like the Yar Kula, upon the entire earth. Kula means it will come upon it entirely, v'shaka ki ar mitzrayim, and will sink. The sediment will sink in the earth, meaning there's going to be a very great chorban. Then we have this very beautiful pasuk, habayne v'ashamayim ma'aloi, so Hashem builds in heaven his chambers, v'agudasai al eretz yisoda, and the aguda, his band, is upon the earth, is established. This is the pasuk that is cited in Pirkei Avos to teach us that when five people learn Torah, it's called an aguda. Chazal tell us that there are many different levels of shechina. When there are 10 people, we know that we cannot have davar shabekedusha demands 10 people. And we know that even if one person, Hashem comes, and if there are two people, Hashem listens. Three people, I've got all the psukim in the Maamari Chazal and Pirkei Avos, but five people is a special degree of Shechina, and the source for that is this pasuk right here, Va'aguda Soy, his band. And Aguda, why is not... Why is not Aguda band?
Five is for the five fingers on your hand. So Va'aguda Soy means...
You hold on to it. Agudasai al eretz yisada. Okay, well, maybe we'll see some of the farshim. We'll explain this in more detail. Hakori la lemeyam vayishbechem. Hashem calls out lemeyayam vayishbechem al pnei haaretz. Hashem pours out the waters upon the face of the earth. Hashem shemay. We did the mitzudas. We did part of Rashi. We're middle of the Rashis. Let's take a look what we're up to. Let's say pasuk vav. That is where we got up to in the Rashis. Pasuk vav agudasai kivutzas biri yosef. Rashi learns simply that the word aguda means the kavutza, the collection of his creatures. Davar acher kivutzas agudas hatzadikim. Not all of Hashem's creatures. This pasuk refers specifically to tzadikim. The aguda he hoisa yisoid al haaretz. This was the yisoid al haaretz le sikras hashamayim shabeshvilam hakol kayam. This is the foundation upon which HaKadosh Baruch Hu builds his Ma'aloisav. So Rashi here is telling us a Chazal, a very fascinating idea, is that when the Pasuk begins, that Hashem builds Bashamayim Ma'aloisav, it has to be built upon a foundation. The Shamayim cannot stand on its own. There must be a foundation. What is the foundation? Rashi, in the second interpretation, is translating the Agudasai to mean the Yisoid. Agudasai al eretz. Thank you very, very much. Thank you. Yis al eretz yisada. The tzaddikim are the foundation upon which Hashem builds chambers in heaven. Obviously, this thing over here is way above our understanding. One more time, the words of Rashi: Davracher kivutzas hatzaddikim, the collection of tzaddikim, which is the aguda. The aguda specifically refers to tzaddikim. He hoisa yisoid. This is the yisoid upon which the previous pasuk says, the beginning of the pasuk says, Hashem builds the ma'aloisav al oretz l'sikras hashamayim for the tikra, for the beams of heaven. Shebeshvilam, only because of the tzaddikim hakol kayam does the earth exist. the ceiling, okay, the ceiling of heaven. Okay, now we know that's what we. I don't know if it can mean that in this context, because we're here referring to the ma'aloisof. Each chamber is a sikra doesn't always mean a ceiling. It means a floor, because the ceiling of one floor is really the floor of the floor above it. Right. Correct?
Yes.
When you have multiple floor. Yeah, but there are two parts to the pasuk. There's what's taking place in Shemayim and what's taking place upon the earth. The earth is al eretz yisada. Rashi learns is an explanation for the beginning of the pasuk. The ma'aloisav in heaven is built upon a foundation. What is the foundation that supports all of the tikra? The tikra means, I don't think it means your ceiling. It means the chambers. It means the layers. The many layers of chambers in heaven, it's built upon the foundation of the righteous people. So Rashi gives us two different interpretations. Either it means aguda, just generally means Hashem's creatures, not necessarily tzaddikim. Any human being is called Hashem's bria, that's the aguda. Or it means specifically the tzaddikim. Okay, there's no doubt about it that the political party called Agudas Yisrael, that was founded probably almost 100 years ago, close to 100 years ago, if not more. I don't know the history. More than 100 years ago?
No.
Probably 1920s, 1930s, so we're holding ready to 2019. So it's probably come out 100 years. You haven't yet...
So,
what? The Knessia Gedolah? No, that was a later thing.
Aguda was already in existence when the Baal
Kodesh. Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Of course, no. But when did it begin? In the '20s? In the 18th?
1917. So if you say it was in existence, so it's probably 1910.
So it's more. It's already more than 100 years. How come you never heard the Aguda make a campaign? Everyone loves to celebrate their 100th anniversary. I don't remember the Aguda celebrating 100 years. Maybe I weren't paying. I wasn't paying attention. All right, any event, it's not relevant. Any event over here is, it's interesting. It's interesting that people always like to go back and understand the thinking of the people when they established different institutions. What were they thinking? There is no difference between Torah Umada, the logo, the slogan of Yeshiva University, and Torah Vadas. Torah Vadas, it's clear as day that they both have the same things in mind. In the book, Rabbi Shlomo Feldman Lubavitch, it makes it very clear that the people who established Yeshiva's Torah Vadas were Mizrahi, but the Balabatim were members, very strong believers in the political party, the Mizrahi, which had a very strong belief of religious, they believed in religious Zionism, and they believed it was very important there should be secular education, and that's why it's called Torah Vodas. Torah for Torah, Das is Chochmah, the Chochmah in the world. What?
After Reines is Yeshiva.
There was another, they wanted to pattern it after a yeshiva in Europe, right, which also focused on two different worlds, the world of Torah and the world of the Olam, the secular world, what the secular world has to offer. Similar to the slogan of Yeshiva University, Torah Umada. Today, Umadua, who said that? Who said that? That's okay. Umadua, Torah Umadua.
I don't remember that.
Okay, so it's very interesting how today, in the year 2019, how Torah Vadas is embarrassed that it should be called Das should have anything to do with secularist, anything secular. Das, you'll say, like it says in this week's parasha, V'amalios aruchal kim b'chochma v'smunu uvedas. And what does Rashi say, Das? Ruach HaKodesh. So you'll say Torah and Ruach HaKodesh. No one's saying that. Everybody said, don't get me wrong. I'm making up. No one in Torah Vadas is coming and promoting that the reason why it's called Torah Vadas is Torah and Ruach HaKodesh. Chas v'shalem. Even though this year is the 100th anniversary. I don't know. I get from them in the mail almost every single day another letter, another thing promoting this year's dinner. Baruch Hashem, 100 years. I've never heard anyone try to falsify history all the time I've been in Torah Vadas to say that the word Das means Ruach HaKodesh. It's clearly acknowledged, even in the Art Scroll book, that Das means secular knowledge. That is how it was established back in 100 years ago. Patterned after a mayor's mention from Rabbi Reines' Yeshiva. It wasn't called Torah Vadas in Europe. It was called something else. Whatever it was. It was a Mizrahi Mizrach, the Balabatim were members of the Mizrahi party. And Hashgacha Pratis, this is the way the yeshiva developed over the years. It took a turn where today they do not focus on the Das. Their focus is on the Torah. They like to pride themselves that they're very good at English department. They do like to pride themselves, okay, and they at least in my day they had pretty good relative to other yeshivas, but that's not their focus. On the other hand, Torah Umada and Yeshiva University, especially under the leadership of Rabbi Dr. Norman Lamb, may he have a refuah shlema b'karoyf, he very much developed the theme, the slogan of Torah Umada. That's the way you do it. It was a very big part of his presidency. He did it in a very, very dignified way.
Well, they went through a thing where they tried to define what it means.
Okay, right.
And it failed.
He even broke a system.
They could not define
it. All right, because it's just drush. Ein moshiv in al hadrush. But it's very interesting. Okay, so I just gave that as an example. I gave that as an example that when an institution creates a name, it's always a very big chachma what the name is, and there's no question about it that those people who founded that party, Agudas Yisrael, who have done all the criticism you can say, whatever you want to say. You know, put that aside. The amount of good and bracha they brought Klal Yisrael is unimaginable. It's undefinable. The bracha they've brought into this world, and what is the name, and what did they select for their name of their political party? It's from this pasuk. It's from this pasuk, and that is something that is very interesting. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu put this thought into their mind, and it's been there for over 100 years, based. Clearly, it has to be based on the Gudosoy al Eretz Yisada. Rashi has two perushim. Either it means the Hamoin Am, every single living creature in this world, or it means the Tzadikim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu builds. No, I have no idea what. I'm just saying it's the Hashkach. I used to work much more in computers, and buying a domain name is torture. It is the worst. Whenever you do a startup, some type of new app or some website, something, it's critical to have a name, a catchy name. And so, you know, if you want to go make a business, anything you want to name, it's fine. There are trademarks, but it's there. If you open up the phone book, you look for AAA. There are only about 1,000 AAA, right? There are only about 1,000. Every basic name you could possibly want, you can. There's no limit. You can have a trade.
Money. You can have even Pashkas. I think somebody made that name. And have to buy it.
Yeah, you want to buy. You can do whatever you want because basically, all you need to do. You're living in a different city, different state. There are ways around of having more than one, but a domain name. There's only one person that can have the domain name business.com. Right? How much did business.com sell for many years ago? $7 million. $7 million, okay? You'll go through online, all the expensive domain names. It's something very, very powerful, very catchy to have a name. And it's very fascinating that this pasuk we're learning now is the name, is the source for the name of a political party which has incredible influence over the last 100 years over the world, over the Torah world. And it comes from this pasuk. What is there in this pasuk that was selected as a makar, something very, very significant to use to trigger? This is how this political party should identify themselves. Next Rashi. Hakore l'nei hayom. The Omar l'chanosha mashirion sagiin kimeyam. Hashem said to gather mashirion. What is mashirion? Mashirion. Michal, you want to give us some help on the word mashirion? Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam shehakol nehiyah bidvaray. Hashem calls.
He says to gather camps.
Camps. Okay, that's camps. So he Rashi is learning here. Hashem calls, it's a, the word Yom L'nei Hayom is nothing more than a metaphor for humanity. Hashem is the one who calls for all of the elements of creation to come together. Camps. Camps of people, camps of animals, camps of all different forms of... everyone together contributes to produce a product in honor of Hashem. Let's take a look at the Radak. Zoma Rashi in the section of these two psukim, Pasuk Kei, the Radak on page 369, Vashem, Pasuk Kei, Vashem Lukim Hatzavakai, is three Shemas. Hu, Shehu, Elokei Hatzavakai. Tzavakai, Melamala Umata. The word Tzavakai means the host. There are hosts Mala, and there are hosts Mata. Uv Yodei HaKol, Hashem controls everything. Hu, Yachariv, Artsam. The Radak is taking a dark side, looking at this pasuk from a dark side, which is the Pshut Shel Mikra. Hashem is calling for the destruction of the Aseres HaShvatim, or for the destruction of the Malchus of Yehuda, the Golos, the Churban Beis HaMikdash. The Hu Hanogea Ba'aretz V'Tomek. Hashem touches the earth and the earth melts. Here we have three perushim for the word Tomoig. Let's see what he says. K'moish Amar L'malav Tirgas Aretz Rugois Aretz Hu Harash. This refers to the earthquake. Uvamokim harash yihu mayim, kimoyshe firashlu lamala, vizel sha'ama vatamoyka, oretshi nisisas oretz bamayim, the flooding of the earth with water, kimoy bervivim timoyg gena, with rain it will flood. We have now a new number four, fourth translation of the word tamoyg, flood. It's like lashon of rotoif, kigan. Raw toif. Where do we use the word tzapasik? Where do we use the word kagan raw toif? Tenoyim. It's the first thing you say. Yale v'yatzmach kagan raw toif. May the shidduch, may the chosin and kala, may yale, may they succeed. May they blossom like a well-watered garden. So the word raw toif means well-watered. Raw toif has the same letters, some of the same letters, dvatomoik, the mem and the gimel, it's similarly listed phonetically, and according to the Radak, it means flood. Hashem will call out Hanogea Baretz. There will be an earthquake, and when there is an earthquake, now we learned this not that long ago. This was something which people over here in the room have challenged. What this means scientifically, we really don't understand this. Is that when there is an earthquake, when the earth cracks, it causes a flood. Now, it's not so clear for us to understand that because we don't really perceive it being that way. Is it?
But a volcano.
Yeah, but that's molten. That's not really. You think it's a flood of molten of whatever it's called, lava.
More water is underneath. I saw through minus the
home. But today in modern times, do we ever hear of a story when there's an earthquake and due to the earthquake the earth flooded?
That's
in the earth, that's in the sea. When there's an earthquake in the sea, it causes a reaction where there's unsettling, and temporarily, the earth floods, and then the waters recede. But the way the Radak in the few psukim before described this phenomenon is the earth itself. We're not talking about an earthquake out in the ocean. Earth, in the earth itself, there is an earthquake, and somehow underneath the earth is water, and because the earth has cracked, the water now penetrates, comes up, and floods the earth. I don't think we are familiar with such a principle, scientific principle, in modern times. Maybe we are, I don't know. But that's the way he explained it before, and that's how he is explaining it over here. Hanoigea ba'aretz, Hashem touches the earth, he causes the earth to quake, some crack, some fissure in the earth, and that opens up a cavity. And in that cavity, water floods, arises and floods, and vatamoig, or it's, he's translating the word vatamoig, flood. The earth is flooded. Four perushim. Quake, the word tamoig either meant zet, not to move, to quake, or meant to sweat, melt, and now it means to be flooded. Fourth perush in the Radak, further. And he brings a proof. He brings up the word tamoig means to be watered. From the pasuk in Tehillim, birvivim means rain. With rain, timoig gena, the earth will be watered. And the pasuk just elaborates, poetic repetition, that the mayim will rise like the yaar and will flood the entire kula, means the entire earth, the entire Eretz Yisrael. The Omar, what are the consequences of this flooding? The Avlu kol yoshveha, kolaymar, yi shochasu, the yoivdu kol yoshveha, everyone will die. Ulamala Omar, the Aval kol yoshveha, lishon yochid, derech kolal, here it's written b'loshon rabbi. He's coming to ask a very insightful question. Before, when we had the same sequence of psukim, not so long ago, per ches, past the ches only a few days ago, there it said b'loshon yochid, and here it says b'loshon rabbi. Vihine Omar Vyavlu called Yoshiva Bloshan Rabin. Lushan Rabin. Derech Prat. So what Derech Prat, similar to how it's said in Bloshan Yochid. I guess just stylistic purposes. Sometimes we use the collective noun and sometimes we write it Bloshan Rabin. Vi also Kayor Lumala Omar V also Kaor Behelem Hayud. Remember we went back and we discussed this last time. There, it leaves out the yud. And that attracted the attention of all the commentaries. And some of them said, listen, so it left out a yud. No one is perfect. Everyone, some here, some leaves out. But do not make any mistake. It means the same exact thing as if it would say ki yaar. What's the proof? Because look in Perek Tes. Look down the line. It's going to say something very, very similar. And there it says with the yud, so there is with the yud, and here it's without a yud, it must be, it's really all the same thing. But if you remember, not everyone agreed. Not everyone agreed that we can learn davar hasasa min hamefayosh, and there we had other interpretations, and one of them was light, darkness. We learned there the word, there also cha'ar, it meant darkness. Well, how could the word cha'or mean darkness? So we went back, we spent so much time discussing this principle so many times, because almost every word in Tanakh, when you manipulate its vowels, it means the complete opposite. Yishrosh, yisharesh. Yiskol, yisokel. Even light. Or means light. But when you manipulate the vowels of or, it could mean darkness. And that's one of the comments that one of the Mefarshim there said, the olasa cha'or, darkness will rise.
Cha'or means ugly, doesn't it? Which also has a...
Shalom Aleichem. Wow, welcome back from the Holy Land. Another action said, welcome back from the Sunshine State. We don't want to insult Eric Kiz or Eric Shalom. Shalom Aleichem, it's nice to see you.
Thank
welcome
you
back.
Much,
we missed you. The cha'or, sorry, what were you saying, Michal? Is ugly. I think that's an Aramaic word.
But
I don't think that's a Hebrew word.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can we say
is that also with an aleph or an ayin?
Ayin.
Ayin? Sure?
What is that?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Does the word say or la bar asa?
Or, oh, excellent. You see that? I never thought of that. That's amazing. Or la arba asa. So we always struggle. What does it mean, or la arba asa? This is such a simple pshat. Or means darkness. It means taka darkness. Because every single word can mean the complete opposite, right? We always in yeshiva, or la arba asa, what does it mean? All the Jewish, not when it's mamish dark. It means when it's getting dark and there's still a little bit of light out there. And there's a lot of halachic nafkaminis. The zman of bedikas chametz must take place in the very, very beginning of the night. When it comes to davening maariv and kriyas shema, there are a lot of different inyanim. We struggle. It's clear that we struggle so much. What it means, or le'arba asa. Or means light. That's not the appropriate word to describe the beginning, the time of bedikas chametz, le'or haner. You have to use light of candle. But when you appreciate that every single word, when you manipulate its vowels, it means the complete opposite. So then taka, it means or. How do we normally, it's really or, isn't it?
Yes.
Sometimes it's called or, yeah. Right? Light is really?
Which means
fire. Kibdu es Hashem b'urim. Urim. So it's not the same vowels. It's not or, which means light. It's or. With a cholam, which you're manipulating the vowels. And when you manipulate the vowels, you are changing the word to its extreme opposite, to darkness. Okay, that is a great finally, it was zoich, at least I appreciate that point, there has to be truth to what we just said. Look, it's not us. This we learned back in Perek Ches, Radak, all the Mepharshim there said, what does it mean, the ulsa ke'or? It means denial? What is denial doing in Eretz Yisrael? And where's the yud? Okay, so with Doichik, it says, we go to Perek Tes, it says here, it says, Ki Yor Kula Veshoka Ki Yor Mitzrayim. We go to Perek Tes, but in Perek Ches, there is no Yud. So you want to just say, okay, you know, it's okay, we can leave out a Yud here and there, but it's much more satisfying when you want to say that we have learned all those things in Perushim. It means darkness, clouds, Onon V'Arafel, or also means darkness, or Le'arbe O'Osar Boit Kimesach Hametz. La'or haner. There also la'or, but there it's spelled also the same way, la'or. All right, we have to struggle to figure out, but at least you've opened up a Pesach, a new opening to something choymer, matter to work with, to go down to the depth of the sugya. Now we come to this very beautiful Pasuk. Pasuk Vav Habayin Radak, page 369, Habayin Neva, Hashemayim Ma'alois, Hashem builds in heaven his chambers. Ksiv it says, Ma'alois Abelo Yud. Again, we're missing letters. We're missing letters here in the pasuk. If you notice in the text on page 368, you notice there's a kri v'chsif. Notice here, ma'aloi sav, and that's the way we pronounce it, but in the brackets is the way it's actually spelled. And the way it's spelled is ma'alo sav. There is no yud between the sav and the vav. What is the significance? So very very rarely do the Mepharshim try to figure out why that's so. Yeah, here and there. Over here, he's also not really telling us very much. He's telling us, "Ksiv ma'alaisa b'lo yud harabim." Whenever there's a yud, yud typically means many. Okay, Rabbeinu. I remember, I learned the hard way. I once made a mistake. I wrote Rabbeinu with a yud. Rabbeinu, ra resh beis. Then, if there's no yud, it means one Rebbe. When you add a yud, it means many. Yuds typically, in strict grammar, connotes the rabbin, many. Now, that's definitely what I said is correct. However, in modern Hebrew, not only modern Hebrew, but it's very, very common that we're not makpid, because we don't typically have nekudos in our sefarim. And therefore, in order to serve as a vowel, we add extra yuds, like de'oraisa. How do you spell de'oraisa? De'oraisa means the Torah. So if you look in the Gemara always spells de'oraisa with two yuds. De'orai, resh, yud, yud, sof, alf. De'oraisa, right? De'rabanon, alumnus. Adin de'rabanon, adin de'oraisa. In the art scroll Siddur, Doiraisa in Brich Shmei has only one yud. What happened? They don't know how to spell Doiraisa. Look in any Gemara. The answer is because in the Gemara, in the Siddur, they put the Nekudos in for you. In the art scroll Siddur, they put the dots. So when you put the dots, you don't need to have the two yuds. Adding yuds today in the modern world is used as a substitute for the vowels, the dots. So, but that's only in modern times. In Tanakh, no such thing. If you don't need a yud, the Torah does not add yuds for a vowel. It's no such thing. If there's a yud, it automatically means that this word is meant to be understood b'lashon rabim. And if there is no yud, it's meant to be understood b'lashon yochid. There's an incredible new thing that came out recently. Not it's already been around for almost 6 years. The Oiz V'Hodra, the folios. If anyone here learns Daf Yomi, and if you use the Art Scroll Gemara, you know that the Art Scroll Gemara, they have a beautiful Hebrew sign. The sign that's Hebrew is not the Hebrew you use when you were in yeshiva. It's produced by a company called Oiz V'Hodra. They are a very, very powerful company. It's headed by Rabbi Laufer. And they're the ones who published the Masifta. But before they published the Masifta, they spent many, many years retypesetting the Talmud Bavli. and researching all of the existing manuscripts that we have today of the Talmud Bavli. I believe they write here in the Hakdama that he worked on 41 manuscripts of the Talmud Bavli, and they compared one to the other. And they not only do they put out, newly typeset Shas, which is what it's printed in the Art School Gemara, and with credit to them on the very first page of every Art School Gemara, they also put on the side this amazing thing on the side of every daf called Hagois V'Tzioinim, which means like just editorial notes, and basically that's a compilation of an analysis of comparing 41 manuscripts, old manuscripts of the Talmud Bavli to each other, and looking for different shinuyim, changes in the text. And sometimes the shinuyim change of pshat in the Gemara wildly. I once went to a shir mitzvah Shabbos on a sugyas of Daf Yomi, and there was a very chashuv person who gave this incredible shir, really incredible shir. And then after shir was over, I went over to him and I said, but your whole shir is really in this Hagah of the Oiz V'Hodar. Look at the Hagah, what they put in the Oiz V'Hodar. There's a note, a little teeny letter, and they make note that in other manuscripts there's just a little slight change of the words. And what you said, your whole shir basically summarized in the difference between what the girsa that we have on our typical and what they've discovered in the other manuscripts. And he was stunned. I remember the expression on his face. He was stunned that, like, he struggled to understand what's going on. He said in the Chiddush and the Nafkamina, and really everything he said is the difference between the two different girsois. And he was not aware that there was another girsa. It made sense to him that there's something difficult with the girsa in the Gemara, based upon his whole analysis and all of his Marim Kaimais, and he wasn't aware that the Ois V'Hodar spent millions of dollars taking possession of various manuscripts and analyzing them and writing the little teeny notes. It's a remarkable thing. So what am I trying to tell you? I just want to make this point is that there, they came out recently, the same exact company, they put out this another masterpiece, which no one even knows about. I don't know why no one knows about. They took their folios and they printed a new Shas with Nikudois. Everything has Nikudois. Ois V'Hodar, this is not Tuvius. To Ois V'Hodar. Gemara, Rashi, Tosfos, every single word on the page has Nikudois. And commas, semicolons, that's to break up the Gemara. In the beginning, what you're doing now is very controversial, right? Chodosh, Osam, and Torah. In the beginning of every volume, it comes out with each new volume in Shas. Now they did already Chulin. They probably come out finished already. It's beautiful. It's magnificent. I can't even open up another Gemara now. I'm so spoiled to use that. In the beginning of this Shas, of each volume, they have a kuntras, a nice kuntras, grammar, all the laws of grammar, and an analysis of how you write words when you don't have a printing press that has dots. How and all this other related material to printing, the history of printing with dots, without dots, why like this, why like that, and how when you don't have the ability to put nekudos in the text, it forced the printers and the writers to write the words with a different spelling. It's out of this world. Maybe, hopefully, one day I want to spend some time and reviewing some of the principles that is presented in this Hakdama. It's a very elaborate Hakdama to this Shas. So here, learn what? No, the Kuntras is not in dots. The Kuntras is not. Good point. The Kuntras is not in dots. Today it's very popular. It's very popular. A lot of Sfarim are printed with dots. Mr. Cole, the battery of you has died. Take it from the box. Feel free to take from the box. There are batteries there. AAA. Okay. So there is this over here. We have over here Maloisav. Maloisav is spelled without a yud. The Radak mentions the difference between without a yud and with a yud. Without a yud means is a lashon yochid, lashon rabin. In modern Hebrew, it's not true. In modern Hebrew, It's the minug of people who write in paired words with dots. Every word there, with yuds. Maloisav here is spelled without a yud. And he points out the difference between a yud and not a yud is Lashon Yochel, Lashon Rabin. In modern Hebrew, it's not so. You can add a yud, and it still can be considered Lashon Yochel, because the yud serves today in modern Hebrew as the equivalent of a dot under the previous word. So it's not a raya. Okay, let's go further. So he writes over here, Harabin, Ukri B'yud, Harabin. Many examples. The Ashmaim who klal l'chol ha'gagalim v'hinehu bona hu bona ma'alosa b'ashmaim v'hin tisha galgalim shein zelim alam zev. He says here there are tisha. Aren't we familiar with there being seven heavens? Okay, so this itself is subject to big machlokes. How many heavens are there? The Gemara has a whole discussion. There's a medrash that says there are seven heavens. Hashem on the eighth. Last week, when you say Hashem l'chin Hashem echad, Hashem is on the eighth. There are seven heavens, and Hashem is on the eighth. But it's not what it says over here. It says there are gal galim, and he says there are a total of nine. Next, tisha miyodea. Tisha miyodea, the tisha gal galim. Okay, this the nine gal galim. V'yagudaso, it's yisada. V'yagudaso, hi ho'esh v'haruach v'hamayim. Three things which are contradictory. Shem l'aguda achas. Is one aguda zelim alam zevichim al oretz v'inei zocha yitzias kol olam mala mata v'yatam echlo yiru miponav. What's the reason? It's the point here is that we should fear Hashem. The tafkid here is to be awakened to fear Hashem. V'eich yuchlu lihi saser mineged enav. How can you possibly think you can escape? V'hubara kol ha'olam v'shoifed u'mashkiach. Hashem can destroy the world. The earth has been established upon its foundation. If they continue down this evil path, a yoitzer can create a utensil and can destroy it. This is a very fascinating idea. A yoitzer is not just someone who creates. A yoitzer is one who destroys. This is an entire chapter in Sefer Yechezkel. We learned this once upon a time where HaKadosh Baruch Hu appears to Yechezkel and gives him a dogma. And he shows him the yoitzer. He shows him the potter. The yoitzer literally means a potter. And he shows him fashioning utensils. And then he shows him that the yotzer is not satisfied with the product. So what does he do? He shatters it. He destroys it and starts again and reshapes it. If the matter is not even put in the oven, in the kiln, then he takes the clay that did not turn out to his liking and he destroys it and he reshapes it. So yotzer, the point Hashem was showing Yechezkel, and over here the Radak is bringing out, is referring to that point, is the Yoitzer, the potter, doesn't just form and create. A Yoitzer, when he is not satisfied with his work, destroys. And therefore Hashem is telling the Navi, you think I created this world, I'm the Yoitzer, Hashem is the ultimate Yoitzer, with the Hei Hayidia. And you think, if I'm just going to let this world stand the way it is, if the world does not achieve its purpose, then you know what? I'm just going to crush it and start again. I'm going to take the mold, I'm going to take the clay that I've shaped. It is not satisfying the shape, the tzur, the form, it's just not the way I envisioned it. And just like a potter, when he is not satisfied, he just crushes it, adds a little bit more water, and just reshapes it. That is what I'm going to do to this world as well. It's a power. There in that period, it's only used in the positive sense. That he shapes, he molds, he transforms. But there's a dark side to this expression. A yoitzer doesn't just create.
I think it also means it.
To destroy?
I think it's
a musr. It means it's a musr haskel. Don't just think it's a one-way street. If you don't behave, then Hashem will reverse what has been created, and it's not going to be to your benefit. Yoitzer, we like to think of the word Yoitzer as one word. It means the creator. That's not what it means. It's not, Yoitzer is the potter.
The former.
It's a pot, what?
Former.
The former. Okay, but it's really, but it's a profession.
He has control over what.
It's a profession. He's a potter. It means a potter. He has a profession. He molds and shapes clay. And the mitzius is, this is part of the job. Not every utensil that he fashions is to his liking. And part of his skill is to make that determination, quality control. This quality control. And if it's not working out the way it was meant, the way it was envisioned, he destroys it.
Isn't Bona and Sosa the same thing?
It's true. Because when the Yoitzer destroys it, it's for the purpose of redoing it, of reshaping it. Correct. It's not just to destroy it and throw it into the garbage. It's for the purpose of reshaping and refashioning it. So this is the Musa, that this world, there's a Yoitzer. And the Yoitzer connotes Hashem has the ability to destroy the world if it's not to his liking. That's what he's trying to tell us. And where do we find that? Sidoim, Amoira, the Mabel, Vinea Kol, Biyode, Kichoim, Biyara Yoitza, Shiasa Kliv, Yashise, Yasa Kli Acher, Kigain, who is Barach, Yashis Binyonoi, Kishi Yirze, he will destroy. Vyasa Bohem, Dovorva, Hafhoi, he will make something new. Gam Bikim, Oilam Yasa, Hafahim, he does the opposites, Kamo, Kumosh, Omar, Koil, Yam, Vyashvichim, Alpin Oretz, Kamosh, Perashtu, Lamala, Kalish Barachu can destroy the world, can start all over again. Whenever he wants. The Achocham, Rebbe, Avraham ibn Ezra, Zal Perash, Ba Shamayim Ho Avir, Vehamalois Hem Shloisha Yisoda, Science, Shahim Galgalim, Zilam Alamazem, Viagudos, I don't know what that means. Okay, whatever that means there are Milois, which refers to different elements. There are elements, gases, chemicals out in heaven.
He already has named them air, fire, and water.
Air? No, that was another interpretation.
No.
So he's saying something different. I think he's saying different elements. Those he's saying the same elements. Okay, fine. Okay, Eish, fire, Mayim, and Ruach. Three elements, and the fourth is earth, fire, wind,
water.
Shem Galgalim Zelam Alamazev Agudasayim Hachayim Life. We have now another translation for the word Aguda. Aguda means life, the band of life. Al Eretz Yisada Shehem Ho Agudois. The life is what binds together. Life is what binds together the elements: the earth, the wind, fire, and Mayim. It's what's the ingredient that creates the band? It's life. Is that what the political party Aguda stands for? Life? I doubt it, but you never know. You never know. Aguda, according to the Radak, means life. Either means only tzaddikim, it means the mu'atzas, only the tzaddikim, or it means the briyos, ordinary people, or it means life. And the fourth parish is money. All right. Haloi, the fifth element, the only element. The only element. Yakesef Yanes Akol. That's what? Yaneh, torture. Money is the source of all torture.
Yaneh is all helping.
All right, no more jokes. It's not yet Purim. Let's now go to the Malbim. Malbim Pasuk Hey. The Hashem Tzivokoi. Hashem Tzivokoi. So back on page 369. The Hashem Tzivokoi. Nogeb Oritz Vatamoig. Negev Hashem alamalo ha'al zayslayt sirgas oretz. Hashem says, I'm not going to tolerate corruption. Shemerames al hamered shenishava b'neihem v'haloshen moira sh'oretz. This language expresses, teaches oretz rogza me'atzma. There was an earthquake. Yoimar poysha zehoya al yidei Hashem. Don't think that when there's an earthquake, it happens naturally. Isn't that amazing what he's saying over here? Even though it seems, the Malbim is saying, even though it seems from the perspective of man, that an earthquake, it's on a biological clock from the moment. This is a controversial thing, very, very difficult to understand. What? When there is an earthquake, can we say, listen, Hashem made the world 6,000 years ago, whatever that means. There's a biological clock built into the world that in this particular year there'll be some type of fissure, shift, and there's going to be an earthquake. So it's not because of man's sins. It's not because of man's anything that man could possibly have done. It's built into the Berea. There is a biological clock. It's just a matter of time until it erupts. That's how it is. So if that's a geological clock. Now, if that is the case, so how do we? How does man relate to reward and punishment? So you'll say the hashka, if you're in the right place in the right time. If you happen to be on vacation on that day when there's an earthquake, or you were not so lucky, you had a meeting, you live in the other end of the world and you were called to come to this place for a meeting, a business meeting, you know, there's a hashgacha that Hashem will bring you to a location when there's something that's meant to happen, will happen. Now, when you want to talk about, let's say, Rachman al-Islam, what happened to the Twin Towers, so that was an act of man. So that didn't have to happen altogether, period. But when you're dealing with something that's geological, so how do we relate to that? So this, the Gedolei Yisrael throughout the generations have struggled. It seems that the Chofetz Chaim held it's meant to be. It seems that the Chofetz Chaim, when there was a very big earthquake in his day, he says that an earthquake is a geological
event,
and there's nothing you can do to prevent it, or it was meant to happen. And we have to understand that and look at it from a hashkafa, that principle. Oh, the Malbim, if you wanted to take a very strict reading of the Malbim, he doesn't seem to say that. What he's saying here, and also, you know, you can't generalize, every situation is different, but he writes over here, he writes, the Malbim over here is writing, I lost the place. Okay, one more time, pasuk K, and let's go in three lines. Shemerames al hamered shenishava b'neim b'haloshen moira shalaretz rogza me atzma. It would appear that the earth quaked by itself. Yoimar poi, the pasuk is telling you don't make that mistake. Nothing happens by accident. Shezeh hoy al yidei Hashem shemered ha'om shehimshul l'roiges haaretz, the rebellion of man, which is hinted to in the quaking of the earth, ushetifas ha'ovim esam lagoyla, and the flooding of the enemies, the people lagoyla, shehim shel aliyas hayar b'hamachas es aretz, kol ze lo haya mikre. It was not an accident. Rak al yidei Hashem, hu noigea ba'aretz v'atomoig v'naaso hamered. Hashem touched the earth and it quaked. And the merit happened. Merit, I think he means over here, is that the earth rebelled, meaning it quaked. K'moish Amar, Re'isiyas Hashem Nitzav al HaMizbeach, V'chein Aidei Hashem, also HaKayor Kula. The flood was not an accident, it was not a geological event. It came up because of Hashem, V'chiso Ho'ivim HaNizkor Le'el Shom Kol Zeho Ya'idei Hashkochas Hashem.
Question is, did it happen because Hashem did it now, or did he set it in motion a while ago?
Okay, those are all the questions. I don't know. I don't know how to answer it. I don't know. The Malbim here is telling us, if you read it very carefully, that an earthquake, and the second is very easy, the fact that the Nebuchadnezzar, Sancheirif, or the Nebuchadnezzar ascended and conquered the land, that for sure you can say is because of Hashkacha Pratis. But to say that an earthquake, right, but an earthquake, An earthquake. You want to say that it's Yad Hashem? The Malbim seems to be saying the answer is yes. That's very hard for us to understand.
And, unless we say, if we're allowed to say that they didn't have not as full a knowledge of geology.
Absolutely, absolutely, Tanakh, right.
We have events in Tanakh
by stone.
Korach.
These are all debates.
We had another event with the death of Yahushua. There was an earthquake because the people were not careful. They didn't bury him properly with the proper
kavod.
Proper kavod. So there was an earthquake at that time.
How do we understand this?
In earlier times, we see that. Natural
disasters
caused by,
caused by
sin.
Is it only where Jews are? I mean, we've had earthquakes in
Alaska
recently.
That's the big question.
What is
so?
California, earthquakes in Italy now.
So that's the big question.
No Jews there.
You talk about Katrina. It's no secret that Katrina affected a place where terrible averos take place. So you want to say, oh, it was Hashkocha protest that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was showing his displeasure with a Mokoyim where they do terrible Averis? Or you want to say it was a natural occurrence? This is a storm. This is a debate which no one has the answers. I'll give you another. There's a book you all must read. It is awesome. Recently published by Pinny Donner. It's probably a doctor, probably a PhD. Pinny Donner. Mavericks.
He's
a rough in
Beverly
Hills. He's a rough?
Yes.
He's a PhD, a doctor also?
I don't know.
Okay, amazing book. It's about all the false, all the phonies and fakers in Jewish history.
I know that.
Okay, Mavericks, something like Mavericks. I read a few chapters. It is out of this world. And he has there a chapter, he summarizes the entire story of Shabbosai Tzvi. So I was speaking to someone yesterday about this, and I got into a really nice, spirited argument. And I said that Shabbosai Tzvi was just manic depressant, bipolar, which today is very, very well understood. It's very well understood. And he was extremely charismatic and brilliant, like none other, a Talmud Chacham par excellence. And the combination of being a person of such a high caliber with having such a severe illness is what created this Churban in Klal Yisrael called Shabbosai Tzvi. And he says to me, no, it can't just be that. Shabbosai Tzvi possessed a ruach of tuma, a spiritual contamination, just like we have Gedolei Yisrael that have ruach HaKodesh today, and certainly then, in the 18th century. So, when was before that? I'm sorry, when was Shabbosai Tzvi? 17th century? So you have to understand, Zelu Mazed, there were people that possessed the Sitra Ach. It wasn't purely just a bipolar, a mental disorder that in those days was not understood by society. So who's right? I don't know.
Can't be both?
Maybe it was a combination of both. So who's right? You can look at it from a very secular, very ordinary, he was a brilliant, brilliant person, and he was bipolar, he was a manic depressant, and if you ever see it, I, Rachman Lusson, once saw it. I saw a person who became manic depressant, brilliant person, and wow, was it scary. Was it scary? I was very, very little then, and wow, to see how he was behaving. He was off the wall. I mean, he was doing things that were just like not human almost. And it really shook me up. Now Baruch Hashem is fine. He's under a lot of medication, I know. And he's married, has a family. And if he forgets to take his medication one day, Rachman Litzlan. But Baruch Hashem, we live in a society where the things are understood. And they're treated and they're dealt with. So I say it was pure. You could argue. I don't know what happened. You can argue it was purely a mental illness. And it affected a person who was brilliant and he knew all the secrets of Yadus, and therefore the combination was lethal for Klal Yisrael. What?
It says
Sholem Malach. Going back even further, you're in Echanami. That there it says he was possessed by Ruach HaTumah. There it Haka says. It says there, my Mori Chazal. So there you have to look at it differently. Then we have Chazal. Chazal tell us, look, that was the time of Nevuah. You can't compare the 17th century to the time of Sholem Melech.
But some was actually talking spirit his own son. I mean,
you can't compare. You're right. You're right. But you still, you're dealing with the time of Nevi'im. That was a time of David HaMelech, a time of the Beis HaMikdash, Ruach HaKodesh, Nevuah. You can't even go there. You can't even look at anything in Tanakh in our view. Let's talk modern times. Let's talk the 17th century. Okay, so the 17th century, we knew we had a Gedolei Yisrael that would heads and shoulders about anything that we know today. But what was Shabbosai Tzvi? Who was he? Was he just a charismatic person who was extremely ill? Or no, you'll tell me, look, we had a Gedolei Yisrael who lived at that time, and those Gedolei Yisrael certainly possessed a degree of Ruach HaKodesh that we have no understanding of today. So maybe this person who achieves such churban, who brought such churban, maybe it was something above and beyond our understanding. It was a ruach of tuma. No one that I know can give us the answer to that question. We don't know. There are two different ways of looking at it. Here, the Ramalbum is saying something very shocking. He's telling us there's an earthquake. The earthquake seems to be a natural event. Natural event. Don't make that mistake. It is the Ribbono Shel Olam who calls the shots. Just because the earth is at in a delicate state and it's ready to go, that fissure or that shift is ready to happen, it doesn't have to happen. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can still have his fingers on the trigger and he can bring about in different ways that it doesn't happen. And it's just a stroke of Hashkocha if it does happen, if it doesn't happen. That's what he's saying. Now,
that's what the Abba Benel says, HaMakadosh Kutubo, because Yom Tomim, Maaseh Bereishis. In other words, things were put into motion, but every day God renews, calls the shots. Is it going to happen, or do I put it off? Or do I cancel it?
But not all the Gedolim learn like this. The Malbim was a latecomer. Malbim is the most modern Mefarish on the page. And people who lived in this time and later, they didn't look at it. I don't know if the Chofetz Chaim looked at it like that. Chofetz Chaim looked at it. No, we don't look at it like that. We look at this as something it was meant to be. It was it says a geological clock in this world. It's going to happen. And you have to still deal with it with emunah and bitachon in the same way you deal with everything in life. It's a very, and who's right? No one knows. It's two different ways of looking at one thing, which is it's just hard for us to really have clarity in which is correct.
Excuse me, is an earthquake predictable?
An earthquake? They're spending billions of dollars trying to predict it.
They predict that they make that for them.
I think they do have a sense. They do have a sense, what I understand
if
is...
Caleb does know where he's going to take Caleb.
Animals have more senses, so they can sense moments before. Only moments before, but not months and weeks. Even animals, they don't get a sense the day, a month before, they're going to tell you that it's going to quake. They don't tell you that.
From the science point, they cannot...
I don't know. You've never heard us on the news, on the radio, there's a warning that in 3 weeks from now, there's going to be an earthquake. You've never heard such a thing. They'll maybe never heard, so obviously not. There's a weakness. They don't know when. There's a problem. There's a crack. There's a crack in bedrock. It goes all the way down. So they're afraid, yeah. Yes. Hashem made it happen in this because Hashem is Magid Mereishis Achris. Okay, it's what you say by a Tanoim. How do you begin the Tanoim? Hamagid Mereishis Achris. Hashem knows the future. It's amazing. The only time you use that nusach, I believe, is by a chasana, by shidduchim. When chos and kala get engaged, the first thing is the tnoyim, and there, how do you refer to the Ribbono Shel Olam? Hashem has many titles, more titles than you can find in by anyone. And the title that's used to describe the Ribbono Shel Olam is he's the one who knows the future. The reason why he saw to it that this zivug come to be is because Hashem knows the end. We have no clue why this shidduch, why not that shidduch, why this breaks up. Hamagid, the one that can tell you reishis from the beginning, acharis, what will be at the end. Hashem knows that in this generation, people are going to need to be shaken up to do teshuvah. So he built into geology a reality that the earth will shake, there will be an earthquake at this generation, at this specific time, because Hashem, who knows the future, knows that we need to be shaken up to do tshuva bedavka at this moment in time. That's one way to look at it. That appears to be the way the Chofetz Chaim looks at it. Yeah?
This week.
About
earthquakes, they say that in California there was a lot of digging of oil there years ago, and that pulled out.
Pulled the oil. The
rock settled.
Yeah,
and
That's what fracking is going to cause.
All right, let's go further. We're going
Hashem in Parashat Vayitchanan show Moshe what will happen in the next generation that coming.
That's correct.
Is it predicted? Hashem, you know everything, doesn't it? What is going to be in the time of Shlomo, this is at the end of the Melech HaMashiach. Hashem showed him.
That's right. That's the age-old question. How can there be bechira chofshis, free will, if Hashem knows the future? That is the ultimate question, the paradox. If Hashem knows what you're going to do,
but we don't know.
You're forced.
We don't know.
But if Hashem knows what you're going to do,
but you are not going to know what is the machshavat of Hashem.
That's a contradiction. Free will, having free will, and the belief that Hashem knows the future is contradictory. This is philosophy 101. Take any course in philosophy, this is the first thing. It's a contradiction. That's enochanami. That is part of the emunah. That is one of the most basic yisodos of emunah b'Kadosh Baruch Hu. That is not a contradiction. It's not a contradiction. That you have to separate part of yadus. This is where we go on different tracks with the umos ha'olam. The umos ha'olam have a very hard time separating these two principles. That Hakadosh Baruch Hu knows the future, yet we are still fully in the driver's seat. We have free will. This is a very hard principle to absorb, but that's a bit elementary yesoid in yadus. We will stop here. Take a short break. A little sif chasidim, and then we'll talk about later about Parsha Shkolin. This Shabbos is Parsha Shkolin. What? There's batteries in there. There's batteries in the box. In the little box, there's triple A batteries.
First of all, I heard of Jack Benson.
Yeah.
I heard that. And second of all, the Rambam says that we'll never understand it. We'll never understand the concept of the Rehoboth's knowing the future. It's a contradiction, and it's impossible to know. It's not on our level. So, what's the kind of problem with doing the rabbi? Just the Masorah? Or is it something halachic?
Masorah.
Svar,
Shochmar,
not about Svar. Rebbe's
a woman rabbi, but not in
the
official
way.
I was once at an event, a rabbi training event. And they asked a Herschel Schaffner, a rabbi, I'm a rabbi, I'm at home, and a lot of times questions come into the house, and my wife will be able to ask a question, is she allowed to ask? So he basically said yes. She's the Rebbetzin. She can ask him a halacha. But not in the official role.
You know that I read an article on the report of the woman rabbi. 75% of them are victims of sexual harassment. At 75%. One woman rabbi, a congressman told her, if I have a rabbi with great legs, he started wearing pants. I have a rabbi with great legs. She started wearing pants.
Victims in their profession?
Yeah.
In their profession, goes to show. It's not just a rabbi. He said a very, very good one. I don't know if he's exactly what he's going to show. He said, when a woman got in the shop, Kabbalah Shabbos is not part of that. It's not part of that. Kabbalah Shabbos.